A statement review of the prescribed burning program can be done. That a complete list conducts about the 4,500 prescribed fire projects per year. They are a prime tool used to thin out every vegetation and such to reduce the risk of future out-dense control wildfires. However, in the very few cases, it will contrive that can get out of control. There have been some prescribed for that happening over the last couple of weeks. So Chief Moore says the forest cases will look at every aspect of the prescribed burning program, from looking service with best available science on up to ground at the actions and decision-making. Moore says this three-month perspiration burning hiatus will not cause a problem because prescribed in general, the Forest Service does not conduct prescribed burning operations during July and August. Gary Crawford, Washington. So June statement review of the prescribed burning program can be done. The Forest Service conducts about a complete 4,500 prescribed fire year. They are a project, a prime tool used to thin vegetation and such and out every to reduce the risk of future wildfires. Here out in the very few cases, it's fire that can get out of control. There have been some prescribed for that happening over the last couple of weeks. So to look at Chief Moore says the forest cases every aspect of the prescribed burning best program, from looking service with available science on up to actions and decision ground at the decision making. Moore says this 3 month burning hiatus month perspiration will not cause a problem because the Forest Service does not prescribe in general conduct prescribed burning operations July and August. Gary Croft during review for Washington. So the statement June of the prescribed burning program can be just conducts about done the for that a complete 4,500 prescribed fire year. They are a prime tool project are served vegetable used station and such to reduce the risk of future outbreaks every control wildfires. However, in your out dense fire that in a very few cases it can get out of control. And there have of control that happening over been some prescribed for look at the last couple of weeks. So Chief Moore says every aspect of the prescribed the forest cases best burning program, from looking service options and available science on up to and decision making. Ground at the burning high. Moore says this 3 meters will not cause a month perspiration. The Forest Service problems does not because prescribed conduct prescribed burning operations in general review July and August. Gary Croft during Bird, Washington. So the statement June of the prescribed burning is conducting program can be talks about done the 40 that a complete year. They are 500 prescribed fire prime to vegetar project are served used stationed and such to reduce to control the risk of future outbreaks every wildfires. However, in your out dense fire that in a very few cases can get out of control. And there has it of control look at that happening over been some prescribed every of the last couple of weeks. So Chief Moore says best aspect of the prescribed the forest cases and burning program, from looking service when to see available science on up to the burning making ground at the hiatus. Moore says this 3 month of not cause a month perspiration our service problems does not conduct because prescribed review prescribed burning operations in general July and August. Gary Crawford, what during two of the prescribed Washington. So the statement June of the burning is conducting programs about them can be here done the 40 that a complete they are a prime 500 prescribed fire to vegetable used their project are control stationed and such to reduce the risk to wildfires risk of future outbreaks every fire that, however in your out dense that can get out of control. The very few cases we'll look at that happening over there has this it of every over the last been some couple of weeks the prescribed best aspects. So Chief Moore says actions act of the prescribed burning program the forest cases and deceased available from looking service with burning and maple science on up to hiatus working ground at the world of Moore will not says this 3 month cause of our service problems does not month perspiration review conduct prescribed burn because prescribed lie in August. Guaranteeing operations as in general of the prescribed Crawford, Washington during the burning is conduct. So the statement June of year and progress about them can be done. They are a prime 4,500 that a complete time to vegetable you prescribed fire troll used stationed and such their project are served wildfires to reduce the risk of future to fire. However, in an outbreaks every that can get out of control. The very year out dense we'll look at that happening over there have few cases. It every over the last been some couple of weeks of best aspects. So Chief Moore says the prescriptions act of the prescribed burning program says and to see available for the far as I'm looking service cases of burning and maple science on up to hiatus working to ground world of Moore will not at the says the cause of our service problems does not this 3 month review conduct prescribed burn month perspiration lie in August. Guaranteeing operating because prescribed two of the prescribed Crawford patients in general burning is conducting to. So during the statement here, progress about them can be done. The June they are a prime 45 time to vegetable you 100 that a complete control used station and such described fire wildfires to reduce the risk of project or survive the however risk of future to that and then get out of control and out next every look at that happening over the very year out dense every other last there have few cases it best aspect in some couple of weeks so chill of conscience act of the prescribed beef more the prescribed fantasy available burning program says for the burners and make the far some looking service cases in hiatus will science walking on up to world the far.
This is Agriculture Today.
You know, we've been looking at what's going on in with the war in Ukraine and looking at the implications in places like North Africa and West Africa and Bangladesh and other places.
Dr. Joe Glauber is a former chief economist at USDA, now serves as secretary for the Ag Market Information Center.
So it's been busy. And as you say, I recently was asked to serve as interim secretary for the Agricultural Market Information System. And for those of you who don't know, AMIS is an institution that was created in 2011 following the last big round of price spikes that we saw in the wheat and rice markets. And there was a lot of concern at the time that countries were putting on export restrictions and other things. And so the idea was that you'd have this group AMIS that would provide regular information updates to G20 members and some of the other large non-G20 members who are large importers and exporters. And the idea would be that that would somehow stop or, you know, help country policymakers not do stupid things. And I think the record is probably a little mixed on that. But AMIS actually has come a long way, and we utilize a lot of USDA data. Utilize a lot of the International Grains Council inputs and a bunch of other inputs from a lot of other international organizations.
Glauber spent some time recently with the new chief economist at USDA, Dr. Seth Meyer.
When folks say, well, the Chinese are holding a lot of stocks, why don't they just release some of those stocks on the global market? And then you have to remember, hey, we think we know what those stocks are, but they're holding them for food security needs. Prices in China are higher than world prices, even at these high prices we are seeing now. Yeah. They're yet higher in China.
Right. And remember that over the first 3 months of this year, they've imported 3 million tons of wheat. So, you know, they are looking to the world market for wheat. So that's the other thing to remember. And so I don't think that China is going to be, you know, that we should expect to see very much coming from China. I mean, I think the real news, obviously, has been the recent export bans brought up or, you know, imposed by India. But there, the issue is, you know, remember that India exports historically over the last 10 years or so, 2 to 3 million tons a year. You know, not a lot. This current year, they're what? I forget your number, Mark, 8.5 or 8.6, 8.0, you know. A sizable amount of wheat being exported by India relative to where they've been in the past. But I think the real difference is right after the war started that, ministry officials were saying they could export up to 10 million or 15 million, even some of the press reports. Well, you know, with the deteriorating situation in the Northwest India and Punjab, you know, clearly that doesn't look like that's going to happen now. The question I think is, you know, how, with this ban, does that mean no stock or no exports, or does that mean, you know, some? And it certainly seems that India's been upfront saying they're going to honor, any letters of credit. They're going to honor, or they're going to try to export to their neighbors like Bangladesh. And so I think that's the challenge for Mark folks, obviously, is to try to figure out how much that actually will mean for 2022, 2023. Is that, if I remember, the baseline was showing something like 4 million tons. And then, you know, you had all these announcements. So do you end up closer to 4? Do you end up closer to 2? Do you end up, where? I mean, that's going to be the big questions, I think, moving forward.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I am so glad to see the Agriculture Committee taking action to address the challenges of our nation's food supply chain. We've all had a rude awakening.
Washington Representative Kim Schreier, a member of the House Ag Committee.
I'm excited to support my colleague, Representative Craig's bill, H.R. 7675, which will help identify solutions for improving the security, safety, and resiliency of our supply chains. This supply chain dysfunction was made worse by the pandemic, but it was first brought to my attention by hay farmers in Ellensburg, Washington, in my district back in 2020. And since then, I've been in frequent communication with growers and exporters all around the 8th District about the issues they're facing, hay, pears, you name it. For about 2 years, they've shared with me how pandemic conditions and the behavior of foreign-owned shipping carriers are hurting their industries, threatening export markets, and frankly, the relationships that they've built over decades. And once we lose a market, we may not get it back. The cost and availability of transportation to both domestic and export markets continue to be a challenge for wheat, cherry, apple, and pear growers also in my district. And as we all know, the rising input costs are putting even more pressure on farmers. This bill will urgently focus federal resources specifically on the strengths, the weaknesses, and areas for improvement on our food supply chain. And it will ensure that USDA is consistently meeting with farmers and the private sector so we can develop some collaborative solutions to stabilize our agriculture and food systems. We've got to do more to bring down prices for the American people and to shore up our supply chain. And frankly, shoring up the supply chain is a way to bring down prices. A comprehensive consideration of the ongoing disruptions will benefit consumers and producers. For example, addressing the shortage of trucking and other transportation availability will allow farmers to get their crops to market more cheaply and more quickly. Similarly, expanding the availability and capacity of meat processing, like my colleague Dusty Johnson was just talking about, and Abigail Spamberger, this bill and theirs will create new jobs, provide more options for small and medium-sized ranching operations like those in my district, and really help lower the cost of meat at the grocery store. Creative solutions like the ones in this bill and several others that we're considering today are a real positive step toward easing burdens on producers and on my constituents and their pocketbooks.
Same House Ag Committee considering cattle markets also asked to consider the FTX proposal for cryptocurrency markets. Terry Duffy, CEO of the CME Group.
As you know better than anyone, Chairman Scott, you and this committee have spent enormous time, you mentioned it in your opening remarks, and energy defending the CFTC standards and regulatory oversight is equal to or better than any other jurisdiction in the world. If, in fact, the CFTC decides to approve a rushed and ill-conceived proposal, we believe the hard-won cross-border equivalence agreement that you referred to could come under question. Just a few weeks ago, sir, a senior European Central Bank official warned, and I quote, "The crypto market is now larger than the subprime mortgage market was when it triggered the global financial crisis." To put this into context, the subprime mortgage market was at $1.8 trillion in 2008. Today, the cryptocurrency value is north of $1.8 trillion and growing. The stakes are extremely high. Exempting FTX from a well-established U.S. clearing rules could undermine confidence in our regulatory regime. Therefore, I applaud you, Mr. Chairman, and this committee for holding this hearing today. Your oversight of the derivatives marketplace structure is critical to ensuring sound public policy.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
In essence, the Kansas Wheat Tour came up with an estimate of the Kansas wheat crop at 261 million bushels, down from what the USDA had said at 271.
It's Kansas State grain economist Dr. Dan O'Brien talking about the Kansas Wheat Tour, the 2022 Wheat Quality Council's Hard Red Winter Wheat Tour wrapped up on May 19th.
Still at risk a bit to getting to the finish line. And we're at the point where, for the sake of grain markets to be stable, we hope it finishes well, really. Right. And the yields of 39.7 bushels per acre. Again, that compares to the USDA's projection of 39. What I found interesting in the Kansas Wheat Tour numbers was the estimate of abandonment. Right. The Wheat Tour estimated about 11% of acres abandoned, whereas the USDA's estimate was 6. And in looking at Wheat Tour numbers in the past, if there's any place that either comes in great or not so great, it's not the planted acres. You have a pretty good idea of planted acres. It's what actually comes out of the harvested acre side. So I think probably pretty well understood, pretty well expected that we'll have a wheat yield of under 40 bushels per acre in Kansas But the big issue will be how many acres are we able to harvest, and you know how many acres will be abandoned or declared failed. With the moisture we've had and the high prices, you certainly have the incentive to go out and harvest what you've got. You know, gosh, it's we show cash prices across the state for wheat yesterday. Colby, $12.09, $12.80 in Salina, $12.70 Topeka, $12.50 Garden City, $12.80 Hutchinson, $12.05 in Columbus. So $12 wheat gives every incentive to go out and harvest it. Also interesting to see that out of that report, Romulo in our shop giving comments about how they didn't see a lot of disease pressure, didn't see a lot of insect pressure. Still in driving out western Kansas yesterday, I saw planes up in the air. So with this much of a high price, it could be that people are spraying just to make sure that they don't have some issue later on. I didn't see a lot, but you sure have the economic incentive to try to preserve what this crop can be. And literally from a U.S. and world food perspective to try to make sure we bring as much of this thing in as we can.
Fields are still 3 to 6 weeks from harvest, so a lot can happen. But what about the rest of the wheat belt?
The Nebraska numbers also were looked at. Estimate of 36.9 million bushels, down from 41 last year. Colorado estimated at, the USDA estimated at, as I understand it, about 49.6 million bushels. The Colorado wheat representative came in and said that it's more like 40 million bushels. So that's interesting and important. Oklahoma number we've talked about before, estimated 60 million bushels, down from 115 last year. And, of course, the Texas crop is also well known to be in tough shape, and a lot of We hear a lot of market discussion about failed acres coming out of there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, quite the situation. It's interesting that the International Grains Council also weighing in on this. They have come out and cut their world wheat production forecast by 11 million tons down to 769 million. And they're indicating that the reason for those cuts are lower crop in the United States. Basically, they're following the USDA, again, 1.719 billion versus their previous estimate of 1.83, and also a significant cut in the crop in India too, which has made news, of course, in the world export market.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
People tend to look at the WASDE numbers and they'll look at the global stocks, and there, you know, we've seen really divergent trends. I mean, we've seen actual growth in global stocks. And a lot of people have pointed to those stock levels and saying, well, gee, there's sufficient supplies.
Chairman of the World Ag Outlook Board, Dr. Mark Jekinowski.
But China is a real big issue here. I think where a lot of the growth has come over the last several years has been in China. And they have varied, obviously, and gone up and gone down. But those stocks don't normally make it onto world market. They're very difficult to assess in terms of the quantity. As you're well aware, there's a lot of difference between even the people who do these forecasts in terms of how much stocks China actually has, let alone the quality. And I think that for a commodity like wheat, that's particularly important. You know, is this, you know, a milling grade wheat, or is this feed grade wheat, or is this even lower quality? And, you know, I think many analysts, and certainly that would include, the work that I do, I typically take China out of the equation and look at stocks held by commercial or, you know, by the major exporters, because the presumption is they're largely in commercial hands, that those will go out to the market if there's price opportunities. And so that they are actually making, you know, those are what you're seeing being drawn down. And so I think that's, you know, to me, that's the main thing here. And so if I look at how tight a market is, or how tight stocks are, I tend to look at the stocks held by major exporters, or at the very least, taking China out of the overall picture. Now, in terms of Ukraine, I think the big problem there, of course, is the blockage out of Odessa. I mean, obviously, the also problems of whether or not you can harvest a crop or plant a crop. But just in terms of the stocks that are within, you know, that are anywhere between, 20 million or so of stocks that from last year's crop that haven't yet moved. You know, the options are really limited. I mean, you've seen in the press a lot of stories about trying to move out through Poland or move out through Romania, and you have problems with the rail gauges being different. You have problems with trying to ship down the Danube, then out to the ports, you know, using the canal to Constanta and ports like that. And it's just you know, I was on a panel with a Ukraine presenter the other day, and they were talking about that the costs were essentially quadrupled that of trying to move it out through the Gulf. So you can talk about trying to improve that. And, you know, there's a lot of effort now of, one, trying to open up a blue corridor, as it were, or some notion that you could actually get grain out of the ports. And I think that, I mean, that would be great, but I, you know, the probability of that right now, to me at least, seems pretty low. But the alternative, moving out overland to the West, the country just isn't plumbed that way, you know, and it comes at a really high cost. So it's great that some is moving, but I don't think that we should view that in the short run, that there's a way of really, you know, having Ukraine contribute and get those stocks out in any great quantities, at least in the near term.
So the question becomes, are the markets working?
With wheat, I don't think it's until 2023, you know, the summer of 2023 that we're going to see much response. You know, in terms of any sort of, certainly if you look at futures markets, there's not much price moderation until those out years. And really, frankly, not until 2024. All of this, of course, with complete uncertainty about Ukraine. And so, you know, I often get the question, isn't it just like a drought? And it is for this year. But remember, with most droughts, we think that the next year is going to be okay again. And that's the assumption we go on. Here is just very unclear, you know, how long this war is going to go on, how long ports are going to be disrupted, et cetera, et cetera.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Well, I'm glad to see several bills move through this committee today. I was disappointed that my bill, the Farm Credit Administration Independent Authority Act, which I introduced with my colleagues, Representatives Jimmy Panetta, Michelle Fischbach, Abigail Spanberger, and Angie Craig, I'm disappointed it wasn't included in this markup.
Rodney Davis is a member of the House Ag Committee from Illinois.
Rural America's access to credit and a well-working farm credit system is key to our supply chains, and I'm disappointed that this hasn't been made a priority in our markup today. Our bill would have mitigated a serious threat to the viability of the farm credit system by clarifying the Farm Credit Administration as the independent regulator of the farm credit system, stopping implementation of the CFPB's overreaching one-size-fits-all proposed rule on small business lending data collection. If we don't stop this rule from being implemented, farm credit lenders and borrowers will be subject to excessive, duplicative, and unnecessary reporting requirements that, at the end of the day, will demand new, costly IT infrastructure, additional staff, and will ultimately expect lenders to guess the demographic information of a borrower in the name of fair lending if this is left unreported. There are much better ways to promote access to credit, and we should preserve the Farm Credit Administration's authority in that regard, especially given the good track record of the system's effectiveness for rural communities. Given the limited amount of floor time that the speaker has given toward bills of value or substance related to agriculture in rural America, this is a missed opportunity. Mr. Chairman, hope we can come to an agreement on this issue to ensure that at a time when inflation and ag input costs are skyrocketing with no end in sight, that our constituents have continued access to an efficient farm credit system that promotes their access to credit.
Austin Pfluger represents the Permian Basin, Midland, Odessa, speaking on the House floor recently.
So let's talk about keeping prices artificially low. Keeping prices artificially low is the policy of the Biden administration to attack the oil and gas industry to keep supply low. That's the policy of the administration. The all-out assault that started on January 20th of 2021 by canceling the Keystone Pipeline while greenlighting the Nord Stream Pipeline has further weakened the United States and our allies and partners.
And his warning is there's trouble ahead.
Biden's failed policies on energy have weakened the United States to such a degree that it's now being reported widely and today that we are going to enter one of the most horrific energy crises that we face in the United States and beyond. And Europe is already going through this. Their failed policies 20 years ago led to their point of paying $25 for an MCF of gas. That's five times greater than what we pay here in the United States. President Biden's own energy expert, to respond to my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, President Biden's own energy expert has said that the worldwide capacity to increase production is less than 2%. That's worldwide. And right here in the United States, when you look at the ESG issues and the assault on capital and access to capital, we do need an investigation. And the investigation needs to look into that assault. It needs to look into the picking of favorites that this administration has used and the weaponization of every tool possible. American energy security is national security. It's time to put Midland over Moscow, not the opposite way.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
A 90-day halt to prescribed fire operations on National Forest System lands. That's the order from Forest Service Chief Randy Moore. In a statement released late Friday, Moore said he's taking that action so that a complete review of the prescribed burning program can be done. The Forest Service conducts about 4,500 prescribed fire projects every year. They are a prime tool used to thin out dense vegetation and such to reduce the risk of future out-of-control wildfires. However, in a very few cases, it's the prescribed fire that can get out of control. There have been some cases of that happening over the last couple of weeks, so Chief Moore says the Forest Service will look at every aspect of the prescribed burning program, from looking at the best available science on up to ground operations and decision-making. Moore says this three-month prescribed burning hiatus will not cause a problem because, in general, the Forest Service does not conduct prescribed burning operations during June, July, and August. Gary Crawford, Washington.